Naturalist Bernd Heinrich tells Steve Paulson that animal winter survival is a marvel.
How animals survive freezing takes special tricks. The inside of the cells cannot be frozen unless there are special adaptations for that. So generally, they first of all freeze liquid component outside the cells, and that causes less damage. So they have to have mechanisms basically to withdraw water from the cells so that the freezing occurs outside and that the osmotic concentration inside the cells goes up to prevent freezing inside the cells.
So this is like a natural antifreeze. They get rid of all the water, or most of the water they have inside their bodies, but they instead somehow produce more sugar, more glucose or something, and that somehow protects them.
Yeah. You know, how glycerol protects membranes, we're not sure of. But, you know, for example, we can protect embryos of humans even, and cattle embryos are regularly shipped frozen. And they are stored in glycerol, which somehow protects the membranes. And so many of these frogs that survive freezing also produce glycerol. Now, glycerol actually has a couple of different functions. It acts as an antifreeze to lower the freezing point so as to prevent freezing. But when freezing does occur, it protects the membranes as well.
And I suppose for you as a scientist, if you come across one of these frozen frogs, your first reaction must be, oh, it's dead. I mean, it's frozen solid, but then you start to realize, it's actually adapted this survival strategy.
Well, I certainly, if I hadn't known about this, if I'd have found a frozen frog in the woods and banged it on the piece of wood and gone clonk, 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 I would say, yeah, sure, that's a dead frog. By far the majority of animals or plants, if they're frozen, they're dead. You know, you put lettuce out and it freezes just a little bit and it turns to mush. So it is really amazing that they can survive that.
And then there are snapping turtles that will burrow into the bottom of a pond or a river for months at a time. And, I mean, the remarkable part of this story is the rest of the year they have to surface above the water to breathe air. I mean, they breathe oxygen with their lungs.
Yes, not just snapping turtles, but you know, a number of different aquatic turtles. Of course, they're air-breathing reptiles and they have lungs, and normally they breathe air. And in the summertime, most turtles are pretty good divers. They can stay down fairly long time. So winter survival basically under the ice involves a prolonged dive. But they have special adaptations that makes them able to have these dives very, very long. In part, it's due to the fact that due to the ice water, the metabolism is very, very low, first of all. And that would aid us for underwater survival, too. For example, people have crashed through the water in a car accident, and they go through the ice. If they are cooled quickly enough, they might be down there half an hour, and you pull them up, and they can revive. And the fact is that they get cooled so quickly that the metabolism goes down, and they're not requiring that much oxygen. So there's no oxygen depletion of the brain. And so it's no damage. Of course, turtles have a minuscule brain, and so they don't have that much to worry about.
Hmm. What do mammals like beavers or muskrats do in the winter when their habitat, let's say a pond, becomes frozen solid?
Well, beaver, of course, is locked in under the ice, same as a turtle, but it has a huge energy requirement. It keeps warm, so it has to breathe oxygen all the time. But, of course, it does that through its lodge, where it has an underwater entrance and air gets in through the top of the lodge, so it always has a place where it can breathe. Now the problem is the food supply, and it solves that by, in the fall, beavers get busy like beavers are supposed to and cut lots of brush and drag it into the water and have a huge brush pile, and they eat later on the bark. So they harvest the brush in the fall when the water is cold so that the bark stays nice and fresh. And so then, whenever they get hungry, they can just dive out of the hole in the lodge and go underwater and grab a twig and come up and eat it in the lodge.
But the muskrat is probably somewhat different. I mean, they don't actually have big lodges like beavers do.
Well, muskrats have small lodges, and they can also come up for air, but they don't make a large food store. So they actually have to forage under the water and look for roots and pond lilies and so on. So their survival places more reliance on being able to swim for a long time underwater. And they actually, come winter, have more myoglobin in their muscles, which allows them to become better divers so they can stay under longer.
Don't they get very cold when they're swimming around in that water?
That's a major problem. Of course, you know, beavers and muskrats have famous pelts with guard hairs to keep away the water and insulating under fur that holds a layer of air to insulate them. But even then they have, you know, their feet get cold and the ears. And so there they have special circulatory mechanisms for allowing blood circulation while retaining the heat in the body called countercurrent heat exchangers. But they also have only a limited amount of time no matter what. And they basically heat up a little bit extra before they take a dive, which allows them to stay a little bit longer before they get cold.
I'm guessing one of the most remarkable adaptations for the winter is what the black bear does during hibernation. You write about how bears may hibernate for up to 5 months, but they don't actually drink anything or urinate during that whole time.
No, they don't eat and drink or urinate, defecate, and so they've got an ideal situation where they're sleeping all winter long, but they maintain a high body temperature.
One of the ways that humans survive is by urinating. I mean, one of the reasons why we have to drink is that forces us to urinate,
exactly.
And it flushes out
right.
The toxins. And if we didn't do that,
right.
We would die.
Right. First of all, the main toxins are the product of nitrogen metabolism, which we get mostly from eating proteins. The bear relies mostly on fat for its energy, and that would release very little nitrogen and hence much less toxins. And those nitrogen products that it does produce, instead of excreting it into urea, which has to be flushed out through the kidney with lots of water and urine, it converts this nitrogen back into protein. So this has a double purpose of saving water and preventing degeneration of the muscles. For example, we would start to metabolize our muscles and we would lose muscle tone and become weak. The bear gets up in the spring and runs up the mountain and is just as much in shape at the end of the winter as at the beginning.
And that's amazing when you think about it, that a bear could essentially be sleeping for 5 months and then one day gets up and goes wandering off without any loss of muscle tone or of bone mass.
Yeah, the bone mass too. We would have osteoporosis and brittle bones. They're definitely extremely interesting animals, and NASA has been interested in them for obvious reasons. For anybody who wants to be out in space and weightless and without exercise for a very long time. So there are lots of medical marvels out there.
Bernd Heinrich is a naturalist who's written a lot of books. Steve Paulson was talking with him about Winter World, the ingenuity of animal survival.